The opinions expressed on the following audio program are solely those of the host and the guests. Byrna Podcast is an independently produced, not-for-profit show and is not associated with the Burning Man organization or its subsidiaries. The views expressed are not representative of the entire Burning Man community and are presented here for entertainment purposes only. In short, calm the fuck down. It's just a podcast.
All right, and it's episode number 32. It is 173 days until the man burns, as of this recording. Believe it or not, this is like the fourth time I'm recording this intro, because every time I record it on this episode, for some bizarre reason, there seems to be some sort of technical issue. Who knows? Is it cursed? Is it a sign from the gods that we should not ever release this episode? I don't know. I'm not one to give up, but it's a shorter one, I'll tell you that. Today's episode is probably going to be the shortest one, or the second shortest one, in the history of this show. And the reason for that is, as I've been telling you guys for the past few episodes, that this one is going to be one of two interviews that we recorded over at Burning Man headquarters in San Francisco. Music editor Navjit and I took a little trip up to San Francisco, and producer Meg booked a couple of interviews. And then after we did those interviews, Nav and I partied our asses off. So that was the important part of the weekend, of course. But the recordings that we did at HQ were really, really quite amazing. When we started this podcast, I don't know, it's been like 2 years at this point, year and a half, that's what it's been. I have no concept of time, I'm an artist. when we started the show like a year and a half ago, I had a feeling that eventually someday we would be making our way over to headquarters to talk to some of the names, some of the people that are working on this culture of ours throughout the year, but I don't know. When it actually happened, it still felt surreal. I actually had Instagrammed while I was sitting there in the waiting area at HQ that I wasn't nervous until just this moment when I was actually sitting there waiting. And it's been one hell of a ride, you know. It probably came at exact perfect time. At one point we had another trip to San Francisco scheduled, and that one fell through, and this particular trip ended up being absolutely perfect, and I'm so looking forward to going up there again. But of course, today's guest, let's get to that one. Today's guest is Iris Yee. Iris is the Regionals Network Coordinator for Burning Man. And if you're a listener of the show, chances are you're already familiar with the fact that we have regionals, you know, because there are lots and lots of burners that I have had conversations with on Playa and other people who have attended the Burning Man Festival throughout the year who really are surprised to discover that there really is this very vibrant community that continues to burn all year round. And when we started this show, that was our focus, to be an outlet, to be a place for people to listen in on conversations who are burning year-round. And maybe those who didn't know that this culture existed, then they could tune in and learn some stuff and kind of get acquainted with it and perhaps get some new ideas on ways that they could activate the burner community in their own region, in their own small town. And it's funny, actually, I remember during this conversation, there's this lonely burner couple in South Dakota, I don't know if they actually exist, that I've been referencing throughout the openings of this show, throughout the interviews of this show. It's always been like my dream for this to be this place for them, this lonely burner couple in South Dakota, this mysterious couple that we don't know if they exist, who needs a place to just feel like they're a part of the conversation because they don't have a vibrant community of their own, like we do in San Diego, for example. We are so blessed to have that. And during the interview, Iris revealed to me that she actually does know a burner couple in South Dakota. So that was pretty fun. We're going to get into that. We're going to talk a lot about the Global Leadership Conference, which some of you probably know about. For leaders in the community, I've had multiple leaders from different communities tell me that they have started to look more forward to the Global Leadership Conference in San Francisco than they do to the burn. because it's just that much of an amazing experience to be together with all these other community leaders and activists from around the world, burners from around the world coming together to better themselves and learn more about activism and how to really communicate and lead their communities into this next chapter of civilization. So we're going to get to talk about the GLC, of course, and we'll get into the Regionals Network. And this is going to be a very educational episode. You will probably hear that I'll be a little nervous in the beginning because it's totally different surroundings. I mean, Iris gave me like a tour of the offices, which if I had to like describe what it's kind of like, I'd say it's a little like Pixar-ish. Like it kind of feels like a Silicon Valley type thing. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of experience touring offices in San Francisco, but it had that kind of open environment, but definitely not covered in dust, like many of you have probably expected it to. So we did a little tour of the place, and we ended up in one of the conference rooms, and I kind of set up some of the recording device, and then Iris is extremely professional. Like she's there at work. This isn't, you know, when people roll over to the studio and they bring over some wine and beer and we end up bullshitting for like an hour and a half or 2 hours. Like this was a professional media interview. So you'll hear that I'm a bit nervous in the beginning. Same warning when I do the Stephen Raspa interview, which that's going to be the next episode of this show. But today's guest is IRC, the Regionals Network Coordinator. You're going to learn all you've ever wanted to know about the regional network and what her job entails and a little bit of her background traveling the world, doing awesome shit. Today's episode is entitled Regional Network 101. Is that clever? I don't know if it's even a 101 class, by the way, because we've talked about the regional network a fuck ton on this show. But I don't know. This is like, it's very educational. We're here for the children. Kind of like Wu-Tang. Regional Network 101 is the name of today's episode with our amazing guest, Iris Yee. I go by Mr. Arash, even though nobody calls me Mr. Welcome to Burner Podcast. Stay after that,
okay.
And then that's when it pretty much just turns into a party. And there's DJ set up, and everybody's gonna spend the night in their tents, and it's gonna be pretty amazing. But I guess if I can't make it to the GLC, that'll be a very legitimate reason.
That's definitely a very legitimate reason.
Yeah, it totally works. So Iris, thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
Since we have usually. I just kind of start a lot of these shows by like asking advice about my love life, and then
we can cover that if you want to.
We'll get into that too.
It could be a series.
But we're a little bit more limited on time than we normally are.
Okay.
So it's going to be mildly more structured than it normally is.
Okay.
But not by a whole lot. So I want to start with I figured this episode is basically going to be Regionals 101. I want listeners who may not be familiar with a lot of the structure and how all of this came to be to kind of get an idea of it through this show. So why don't we start with what your official position is here and your connection to regionals and how it all kind of came together.
Sure. My official position here at Burning Man is the regional network coordinator / regional network committee member. Basically, I'm I'm a person of support for the hundreds of volunteer regional contacts that we have around the world. So I support them in their work, provide them, help them get resources from here in the office where we are right now, Burning Man HQ, for them to be able to do their awesome work trying to support and facilitate Burning Man culture around the world, whether it's through regional events that are inspired by the 10 principles or civic activation projects that are inspired by the 10 principles and culture. I'm that conduit.
Mm. That was a great elevator pitch.
Thanks.
That's perfect. Very professional delivery.
Yeah. And for my sort of like regional background, I live in San Francisco right now, but I'm not a San Francisco native. I'm from New York. So I sort of discovered Burning Man while living as a New Yorker and made the journey flying in to San Francisco, then caravanning with a group of friends from San Francisco to Black Rock City, and then got engaged in the local regional community once I went back to New York City.
Mm. Yeah, that was, you actually grabbed the next question right out of my mouth.
What's the next question?
Yeah, that was it. That was it. So when did you move to San Francisco?
I moved to San Francisco in February 2013, not directly from New York City. I spent 4 years living in Beijing.
Mm. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. A little bit of a switch.
Yeah, and got to know a little bit of the burner community there, mm-hmm. of which there I did not find very many, mm-hmm. but there are definitely folks who've been to Burning Man, who live in Beijing, live in other parts of China too.
Yeah. What was your first burn event? What was your first introduction to the community?
My first introduction to the community, besides Burning Man, going to Burning Man in 2008, was getting to know the community via New York. Trying to do my best as far as homework, how to prepare myself, and I only started really getting involved locally after my 2008 Burning Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you kind of get sucked in.
And the crew that I camped with during my first year in Black Rock City were from, they're based here in San Francisco. I'm eternally grateful for them. They're called the First Republic of Slacking. They exist no more. But we had a good first year.
I'm totally stereotyping at this point. But what? I feel like, no, it's coming. Your energy is like calm. And I've had a lot of the New Yorkers that I've had in my life, like it usually starts out like you're very New York, you know, like we're getting shit done, get out of my way, getting shit done. And then I wonder, like, was it the burn community and getting more involved that changed your energy, or have you always been kind of like more?
I don't know. I don't serene. Know if it's my serenity or my perceived serenity mm-hmm. comes from the burn community. It could be all a lie. Comes from the burn community or comes from living in Northern California. That could be it. But I would definitely consider myself, and maybe not so much, but a high energy New Yorker once upon a time.
Mm.
But, you know, you learn, you get as you get older, and this may or may not be related to my Burning Man experience, you take things in perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
No one's bleeding.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
okay. This can be solved.
What was it that you were doing before this life?
Before working here in Burning Man HQ, I worked a lot of different jobs in mostly sort of communications marketing fields, starting with the American Civil Liberties Union in their headquarters in New York, to doing sort of communications, relationship building functions for small indie film companies in New York, then for bigger consultancies. Yeah. And then working in similar function for online companies in China, and a little bit of event festival production work there too,
yeah.
which is super fun and super interesting to do it in a place like China.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the challenges that you deal with over there that you wouldn't have here?
Well, technically a festival, you need to have approval.
Yeah.
But
is that legal? Like they probably say it's a religious gathering or something.
You need, well, I don't know, but are you talking about Burning Man gatherings or just any sort of?
No, just in Beijing specifically. Just
well, you in Beijing and you need a permit to have a public gathering mm-hmm. of above a certain number of people.
That's the same here.
There's that.
Yeah.
There it, there could be a lot of delays in getting that permit, which means you can't sell tickets, which I'm sure a lot of event leads can relate to, about not having the ability to sell tickets unless they have permits, et cetera, dialed in. There's also for a lot of cultural events, you need to have the content mm-hmm. approved.
Yeah.
There are ways to get around that, and smaller producers do. But yeah, it becomes a little bit of a tense situation sometimes.
Yeah.
When the content of what you hope to offer is also under scrutiny.
Yeah. There's I lived in Iran for about 4 years when I was little. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. Like over there, like newspapers, for example, they're very expert at presenting words a certain way in order to communicate to the public what the real meaning of the article is, but they're just good enough to get past the censors to say, like, all right, this article's approved.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if you guys had to deal with any sort of stuff like that, like a little bit of trickery.
I personally haven't had to do that, but there's definitely, we call it the Great Firewall of China. There are sort of bots crawling the internet looking for certain phrases and certain words that are censored and content.
So you have to avoid those words.
Yeah.
Yeah. What sorts of words?
Just sort of words that are related to sort of controversial topics. I can't remember any off the top of my head, but like platforms that are that are censored wholesale include Twitter, Facebook, that sort of thing.
Wow. Yeah. The Great Firewall of China. All right. Yeah. I learned one new thing on this episode, so I'm good to go.
Have you been back to Iran since?
A couple of times. Mm-hmm. The last time I went, I got full-on, like, cultural shock.
Mm-hmm.
If you're familiar with that.
Yes.
Was talking to walls, crying, like, it was weird.
Okay,
got super weird. And then my next stop right after that was London to see family there. And it was really interesting. Like, coming off the plane, the first thing I see when I come out of Heathrow is this massive billboard of a naked woman's ass with a barcode on it.
Okay.
And they're advertising a series of documentaries on the BBC about prostitution. So it's a brilliant ad, by the way.
Okay.
But the first thing I see after seeing all these, like, you know, covered up women and smog from Tehran was this, like, giant naked ass. It's definitely a...
That's another cultural shock in another way.
Yeah.
From Iran, I would imagine.
Did you experience anything like that coming back to the U.S. after 4 years in Beijing?
Absolutely. You live in a country where social codes are very different. Just not even talking about like laws and how things are done.
Yeah. Because
so,
it works as a bell curve. It's like you're there. At first, you're excited to be in a new place. Then you go through the frustrations of things not being the way they used to be. And then it moves back to like, okay, now I'm comfortable with it.
Yeah.
So then when you come back, you go through that again.
Yeah, you sound like you have experience in this bell curve.
I took one class at San Diego State, and I remember that.
There's definitely a bit of a bell curve, and I've at this point been here for living in the United, back in the United States for a couple of years, so I'm over that top of the curve now.
Yeah. So what brought you to Burning Man? How did this all happen?
I think...
Officially working here.
Like many people who are officially working here volunteered... for a few years. And my condo was volunteering with Media Mecca, Playa, in 2009. And then sort of stayed in touch with the folks at Mecca, volunteering from afar, doing very glamorous work, like reviewing applications, which you submitted to...
Producer Meg submitted.
I'm thinking about looking at this little tag on your... Right now, I'm holding the little media tag that's on his microphone. So, reviewing reporters, journalists, or anyone who wants to cover Burning Man in some sort of way, their applications to film, to record.
Yeah.
So, I did that
so
far. And when I moved back to the United States, I got in touch with some folks here and said, I'm available to volunteer. And sort of volunteered, and which segued into a position where I am now.
Beautiful. So the position, did it start out specifically as what you're doing right now, or did it eventually mold to this? Like, were they like, all right, we're building regionals, this is the job?
It was a new position.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I joined the regional network team In 2013, the summer of 2013, it was a year of where they created the position to help support their greater need for support by regional contacts, by the regional network.
Because prior to that, how were they handling the regionals?
It was a very, very small team of one and a half, two people. So it was clear that there needs to be more sort of support. Mm-hmm. It was more than two people can handle. So,
okay. So, basics of what the regional network is for those who are not familiar. How do you explain it in a few sentences?
Okay. So the regional network, is a network of volunteers. We call them regional contacts, who are sort of conduits and facilitators of local Burning Man activities. Most people, or not most people, I'm not gonna make that assumption, but there are definitely people who leave Black Rock City super inspired and fired up to bring that sense of whatever they felt in Black Rock City back to their local communities, whether it's San Diego or New York or Beijing. And regional contacts are facilitators who sort of like help connect local burners with each other, help connect local burners to burner activities that may be happening in their region so they can feel inspired to be able to have that feeling or, you know, that they felt in Black Rock City around the 10 principles or whether it's creative expression, the other 51 weeks of the year.
Yeah, yeah. And do you, because we've had a couple of different, we've had a few different regional contacts on the show. Yeah. Athena was the last
one.
She's amazing. She is, yeah, that's one hell of a story. That one you have to listen to. Of course, Brady Mahaney was our very first episode. Mm-hmm. We've had Finn. I mean, there's San Diego regional contacts, Nicole. But everybody's had a little bit of a different story about how they officially became the regional contact. So do you guys have like an official system in place at this point?
We absolutely have an official system in place. So in most cases, if we have, we open a call out inviting the public to self-nominate if they're interested in becoming a regional contact. Usually there's an opening that we have because someone decides to step down from the role because they've been in that role for a number of years and they're ready to transition something different, or it could be a place where it's a region that's new to us that we didn't realize had a burner community active that's active there, and we want to find someone there who can best represent Burning Man.
How much activity does there need to be in order for it to be like recognized as a community?
I think it depends. It depends on like, is it? Are you talking about a huge state? Are you talking about a city like San
city.
Diego?
Yeah, let's go with city.
I don't think there's a formula, but we want to see that there is some sort of year-round engagement from people who've been to Black Rock City or are interested in sharing Burning Man culture locally. So to expand, there's an open call out that usually lasts 2 weeks, and that's sent through the local region's announce list. So for San Diego, it's sent through San Diego-announce group. And that's usually amplified by posts on local Facebook group, that sort of thing. And people are invited to self-nominate within that two-week period. Mm-hmm. There's a review process to look at those self-nominations. And then there's a written application that's online through burningman.org that people can access through their burner profiles. And there's another round of interviews that happen with the candidates and the regional network committee, of which I'm one of them, and also other folks who are on the RC search team, the regional contact search team, which consists usually of folks we call the meta-regional contacts, or perhaps like ex-regional contacts who...
You say meta-regional contacts?
Meta-regional contacts, yeah. So
they're a
group of regional contacts or former regional contacts who've served in their role for a considerable amount of time and have sort of, they're in, sounds silly, sort of in a meta role where they can serve as an advisory body to the regional network.
Mm-hmm. So they've kind of proven their history with the culture, and you can kind of rely on their word when you need some inside scoop.
Or when we want some insider advice, when we not from something that's so deep within the office. Mm-hmm. So there's an interview process, and there's also a community feedback process where the community, the local community, is invited to share feedback on their experiences volunteering or working with the folks who stepped up for the role. Mm-hmm. And this is like a very important part of the process. And that process is outlined on the burningman.org website in the regionals section, regionals.burningman.org.
And is there a formula for how many contacts there are per region, depending on the size of the region?
There's not like a formula as far as like population plus number of official events, but we want to be able to find people who can successfully facilitate projects there. And sometimes we look for people with complementary skill sets. Mm-hmm. Some people are more adept at, let's say, volunteer coordination, and other people who are more adept at storytelling. Mm. Other folks are more adept at other skills.
Yeah. So. Yeah. What has been the biggest surprise to you? Has there been any, like, something that you weren't prepared for before you took the job?
I think every day is full of surprises. Things I have not prepared for. I think knowing it's interesting to be in this role because burners have a very independent streak. They don't like to be told what to do in my experience. So it's interesting to sort of be sitting here and seeing how the culture is developing across the world, especially people who are very independent and want to bring their sort of like own local flavor to what they do in the world. For me, it's really interesting and surprising to see how local communities manifest burner culture where they are.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge.
And one of the questions I ask regional contact candidates is, what is great and what do you love and what is unique about burner scene or culture where you live? Like, what gives it its local flavor?
Yeah, it's funny. It's, you know, of course we've had the same experience many times. Like, we're sitting in meetings and you just want to like come to a consensus, but there's like all these different opinions in different directions. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that most often they're all extremely like well thought out and intelligent. So there's trying to come with a consensus without like just like putting the hammer down and saying this is the way it's going to be. Is, I feel like, probably the most interesting challenge that this community has to deal with in terms of building a bureaucracy, because we kind of have to at this point. It's like it's continuing to grow. Mm-hmm. Is that a conversation you find yourself having more and more often? Does that ever become a thing, like you were describing, trying to get independent thinkers into kind of agreeing that there is going to be a hierarchy, there is going to be a structure, you have to answer to so-and-so?
I think it's definitely a thing. And one of the cool aspects of the Global Leadership Conference that we're hosting at the end of March, early April, is where we offer folks a platform to be able to talk about what's working in their community when you have a group of really, really independent thinkers who are put in a situation of having to collaboratively organize their first regional event or figure out, like, how do we manage finances or funds that come from the regional event? Mm. And I think, the key for us is, like, are they doing it in a transparent way? Are they reporting out to the community? Is it collaboration? Yeah. Does decision-making power rest on a bunch of individuals versus just two? And, you know, I'm distracted. Someone just brought cupcakes past the door.
All right, noted. Okay. Cupcakes. That's how you get Iris's attention.
But, like, you know, we hope that... I don't think we have the magic bullet answer to that. But we definitely noticed certain trends over the years. And we try to bring together people who are further along in their community's development to share their best practices. And it's a subject matter we call, like, entity development, which sounds, like, so formal a term, but, yeah, a lot of folks
entity
are...
Entity development.
Yeah, like, San Diego has, what, San Diego Collaborative Arts Project. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that didn't just come from nowhere. So it took some folks sort of working together to hammer out what's the way to best manage, like, communities, assets, and whatever.
Burner Podcast.
All right, person and persons. I'm trying to find a more politically correct way to say ladies and gentlemen. Quick little break. Just wanted to let you guys know that there are multiple avenues that you can listen to the show. I do mention them in the closing credits of every episode, but I know that some of you don't listen. So we're on iTunes, of course. We're on Libsyn. Libsyn is the broadcasting platform. It gets the show out to some of the other networks. Stitcher Radio is definitely my favorite avenue, my favorite platform to listen to podcasts. It's a great app that you can download. Stitcher. SoundCloud is where you can download this episode and save it for your own archives with the top quality recording, because SoundCloud has, I think, the best quality in my opinion. And the newest addition is Spreaker. Spreaker is another platform that you can listen to the show on. It's like Speaker, but Spreaker. It's kind of weird. Name makes me giggle a little bit. But Spreaker is another one that has, I think, the last 5 episodes is the most that it has. But iTunes is where you can listen all the way to episode number 1. Which I'm not sure if I recommend, because I'm told over and over that the show has gotten monumentally better as it's gone along. As things do! And if you have any content, if you're interested in guest posting for the Burner Podcast blog, we would love to hear from you. Go to burnerpodcast.com. There will be links to all of these other platforms. Do leave us some reviews. We would really, really appreciate that. It helps us move up in the rankings. And if you have content that you'd like to contribute to Burner Podcast blog, shoot us a message at burnerpodcast.com. There is a contact page there, and one of us will check it, I swear to God, one of these days. Now let's get back to Iris.
Welcome home.
So, the GLC, the Global Leadership Conference, what is the history of that? When did that start?
That started 10 years ago. So 2016 will be the 10th year of the Burning Man Global Leadership Conference.
And that's held here at HQ?
It's not held here at HQ. It has been held in Burning Man's offices in years past. So the first Global Leadership Conference had 80 people, and it was held in Burning Man's old offices. Now we've completely outgrown, as far as by sheer numbers of folks who come in from around the world, we've outgrown the office. So we've had it in different venues. We've had it at the office a few years ago, but we had to have rent a few neighboring buildings, so it had a campus feel. Mm-hmm. This year it's in downtown San Francisco. So one of the most easily accessible parts of the city. So it shouldn't be, hopefully, I don't know if it was hard for you to find the office, but
it was pretty easy. Okay. Yeah, it pops up on Google Maps.
Yeah. So this year it's in downtown San Francisco, mm-hmm. not in the office.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're excited to host, I think this year up to 500 folks, mm-hmm. which is more than we've ever had. And it's a big leap from 80 10 years ago.
Yeah. And you know, I guess professional descriptions aside, what is the goal of expanding the culture? Is it just to continue building the community for the events to grow? Is it, around the office when you guys are talking, and not just logistically, but from your heart, what is the ultimate goal here?
Well, I'm going to use the word some people really embrace and some people don't, but I think people, and I don't know if you have an amazing, and the word I'm talking about, transformative experience at
I've had several
Black Rock City, or whether it's Utopia, or name your regional event or project. And I think the mission of the regional network is try to get people a little closer to having that feeling every day. Stephen Raspa, whom I think you're going to talk to next, has this great, great statement that he repeats to folks when he's asked some question, why does there have to be? And I'm totally bungling this, so ask him to ask. To
okay.
Say it. why does there have to be a default world? It's only a default world if you default to it. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Thinking about blurring that lines between your burner life or your burner world and the default world.
Yeah.
I think offers people a little more happiness in what they're doing and satisfaction mm-hmm. in the way they're living their lives.
Yeah, I had a moment at Temple Burn this year mm-hmm. where, because the year before, I cried for a good 15 minutes, and my friends Boone and Bob, who's the co-lead on Utopia this past year, they're just like holding me, and I was like, just like crying, like letting out like years of who knows what. And this year I'm standing there and I kind of like almost felt myself trying to like push a tear out, but nothing came out.
Okay.
And I stopped and I'm like, ah, oh, I'm going to go see all these fuckers in like 48 hours. like we have that community. We're so blessed in San Diego. And we, you know, and this show, we started it,
what's the origin story of the show? I'm curious.
Well, the idea was when I first came into the community, I was meeting all these amazing, fabulous people, right? Mm-hmm. And I would meet them at like an event and they're dressed in, you know, something insane and they're acting insane. And I'm looking at that, I'm like, there's no way you have your life together. And then I would go and meet them outside in the default world and see that they're amazing. They're either like entrepreneurs or like have this like amazing home or amazing art they've created, or you know, there's all these things they're doing, and they are active citizens of their city, their state, the country, whatever. And I wanted to kind of document that and tell that story, because I've always been attracted to like, this is what you think you're looking at, but here's what it really is. Like, that's always been a part of my art. And I started it with a video project, and I was like, this is too much editing, and I don't want to make a 5-minute video about a person because it's not enough. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that I had forgotten, apparently, that I've been co-hosting another podcast for like 4 years. Okay. So I was like, hey, why don't I just start a new podcast? And that's how this show came up. And sort of the idea is that this is a show, like Navjeet, who is our music editor, he calls it the conversation you didn't have on Playa.
Okay.
So this is, the idea is, I always think about like this one lonely burner couple in some small town in South Dakota who doesn't have a community, that they can just turn this on and be a part of that conversation.
Well, since you mentioned South Dakota, we do have burners in South Dakota.
Of course we do.
Yeah, and we just actually brought on a new regional contact.
Where?
In South Dakota, Jake.
Oh, wow.
His name is Jake, also known as Dew Dude.
Dew Dude.
Yeah, in South Dakota. So there are burners there. There's not a ton, but
yeah,
they're out there, and I'm sure they'll be eagerly awaiting.
Oh, well, you guys got regionals podcast. Now. I'm going to use like Montana as an example next.
Montana! There are regional contacts in Montana as
of
well.
Of course.
Same with South Dakota. Not a huge community, but they're definitely there.
Do you know all the regional contacts personally?
You know what? I know all their names, but I have not had the opportunity to meet every single one.
How many are there?
At this point, we have over close to 250.
Wow.
So I feel super grateful that they're out there in the world being these conduits. Mm-hmm. And they're in places where you don't think they will be. Like, we don't have a regional contact in Iran, but we do have one in the United Arab Emirates. Yeah. We do have folks, of course, in San Diego, like you, where you're from, mm-hmm. To New York. I mean, the first regional contact was based in Austin, mm-hmm. Texas. And you just saw his portrait downstairs when we were doing an office tour. So,
I imagine any burners in Iran are going to Midburn in Israel.
Possibly. I would love to learn if there are burners in Iran. It's tough, frankly, to track, you know, where burners are coming from through our ticketing system, at least mm-hmm. from Black Rock City, because people buy tickets for their friends and, you know, that sort of thing. But I'd be curious to find out if there are any burners coming from Iran.
Yeah. I mean, it's with the government oppression mm-hmm. on communications, same thing, you know, Twitter, Facebook, all that great stuff. It's difficult. They kind of keep it under wraps.
Okay.
But Dubai, I could just attest that Dubai is one of the places that, Dubai and Israel, like in that general area, like those are places that Iranians who are looking to go and experience something outside of their harsh restrictions in Iran, they'll go to like Dubai, or they'll go to Israel, or they'll go to Turkey mm-hmm. and have that vacation and then get back their default world.
Okay.
Which is systematic government oppression. But
yeah, I wonder how much do they bring back and internalize after having that experience in Israel or Dubai?
I have a feeling, this is completely anecdotal, but I have a feeling it's a little bit more than the average person who lives in the United States. Mm-hmm. Because in Iran, it's a very conscious thing of like, all right, I'm outside in the street right now. I have to behave a certain way. I have to dress a certain way. in order not to end up hanging upside down in a dark room somewhere.
Okay.
So they have a very conscious mask that they put on. And as soon as they go indoors or you go to a private property or you're having private conversations, they're completely open with each other about what their real thoughts and opinions are. Whereas, like, if you're a U.S. citizen, you don't have to hide the fact that you went to Burning Man. Like some people do.
I don't know. I definitely know folks who sort of, it's not the first thing they bring up in conversation.
Yeah.
That they've been set up with Black Rock City or Utopia or name your event.
I know. And but they don't have to, though. Like, they do it because of the social circles they've built, mm-hmm. or maybe the job that they have. They're afraid of being mm-hmm. scrutinized at work. But they don't have to work there. They could quit and go get another job.
True.
I'm sure it's not that easy. I'm making it easier said than done. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to do it. Whereas in Iran, it doesn't matter where you work. If you're outside in the street, it is a theocracy. It's the world's only official theocracy. Mm-hmm. You have no, like, you have to, or you end up hanging upside down in a dark room somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I would venture to say that the culture with those who are experiencing it, it's resonating with them even harder in their day-to-day circles, and they're just better at keeping it a secret, and they're kind of biding their time until government shifts a little bit where they can come out of hiding as a whole. Because, mm-hmm. you know, over there, they're hiding everything. But yeah, I will try to find your original content.
Oh,
contact
them. Or point them my way.
That would be great.
I'd love to talk to them.
So let's get back to the GLC real quick, though.
Sure.
So what sorts of things are contacts? First of all, how do contacts get chosen? Who gets chosen to go to the GLC?
Every active regional contact, meta-regional contact, and for folks who are, we call their former regional contacts, we call them alumni in good standing, are invited to come participate at the Global Leadership Conference every year. So they form a huge group of folks who come to the conference. And then every regional contact or regional contact team, if there are multiple regional contacts in one region, are given opportunity to identify community leaders in their region whom they think are the best in bringing back knowledge, learnings that they get from the Global Leadership Conference back to their community. So we ask the regional contacts or regional contact teams to work together and collaborate and identify those people so we can send them invitations. And we hope they do. We hope they do come. We realize that San Francisco Bay Area is a long way to travel for a lot of folks, whether they're from Taiwan or China or from Dubai. So most of the folks who do accept the invitation tend to come from the United States mm-hmm. or West Coast of Canada. Mm-hmm. But we do our best to try to record a lot of content that we can share to folks afterwards. And if you go to the Burning Man channel on YouTube, you can find recordings from past presentations and keynote speeches from last year's Global Leadership Conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What sorts of things are they? I mean, like, what would you compare it to?
Content?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this year, the theme...
What sort of talks?
Talks. So a lot of the content is structured around what we call learning tracks. And these learning tracks offer a way for participants to sort of frame their conference experience and also to choose their own conference adventure. Mm-hmm. So one of the learning tracks is organizational development. We touched upon that, like things like entity development. Like if you're forming a legal structure to manage your community's finances from a regional burn. So there's a bunch of what we call breakout sessions that are under that learning track, organizational development. And it's a lot of also some, you know, business basics that we hope regional contacts have under their belt once their community gets to a certain development level.
Yeah.
Then there's community events. So it's things like event production skills or how to collaboratively work together in creating an amazing transformative event for your community. That's one learning track. And it's probably the meatiest track as far as there's the most breakout sessions within that track. There's another track that we call civic activation. So that's focused on ways and best practices as far as what regional communities and sort of like-minded organizations are doing to engage their local community on a civic level. So whether it's working on civic art projects or in ways in which they're engaging with the local government on a certain project, then there are breakout sessions within that civic activation track. And then there's a learning track called personal development, because many of our sessions and learning tracks are focused on working collaboratively with other people, but we also want to honor that you are who you are. Yeah. You also need to take care of yourself and also think about your own sort of skills and experiences as a regional contact or a local community leader or as a conduit, pick your term. So we have a group of breakout sessions structured around yourself, growing yourself as a leader under personal development. And then we have a track that sort of weaves between all those other tracks I just talked about called foundation skills. So if you're new to the GLC, you've never attended, or you just joined as a new regional contact in your place in the world, we highly encourage you to sign up for the sessions within that foundation skills track.
Mm. Yeah. Have you guys considered the probability that people who are not burners are going to want access to this, like, experience?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We get feedback every year, usually around the time when we also blog about the conference on the Burning Man, what is now known as the Burning Man Journal.
Yeah.
And so you can see in comments people want access to the experience. Unfortunately, we're not in a space where we can really grow the conference. It's quite expensive to organize and produce. The organization underwrites a huge chunk of the costs in order to offer this experience to regional contacts, community leaders, in the hopes that they use what they learn to help support their local communities. But, you know, Burning Man is really committed to learning opportunities for its community. There's an artist symposium, which you may have heard of. Last year was the first year Burning Man produced that and offered that to artists. So there are other educational learning opportunities for folks, depending on their interests.
Yeah, it just keeps growing. What's the biggest thing that you personally gained from this experience? The biggest shift, the biggest lesson, personal change?
Biggest personal change. I think working here, you can't help but learn to change your lifestyle and thinking. So you do.
Like you've always been it. Like, it looks like you're already wired long before this. Like, I want to help the world. I want to go do things. I want to go help people. Like, you're already wired for
that. Yes.
Yeah. So that's not new. But what's been your personal experience? Like, you're saying shifting your lifestyle, shifting what you're accepting.
I think shifting, how your day-to-day, the way you live your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for me personally, the line between, let's say, default world and burner world is, blurred and doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
Just by the grace of, working here. But I think everyday life, the way you approach things or problem solve, your interactions with folks who are not necessarily burners, change.
Yeah.
I think it's a great, side benefit, impact.
Yeah.
Being in this community.
It doesn't hurt that you live in San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco is definitely the nexus of a lot of, or a certain portion of burner culture. But for me, I'm more interested in what's happening outside of San Francisco.
Yeah.
And the Global Leadership Conference is, for me, a really exciting opportunity to learn from what folks are doing far from Black Rock City, far from San Francisco.
Yeah. I've had conversations with people in San Diego and outside who, and the same thing has been uttered multiple times. Like, they're surprised at how aware Burning Man HQ is of what's going on in the individual communities. Is that something that just comes up through, conversations? Is it just, you, remember everybody. That's crazy to me.
I don't remember everyone. I'm terrible. I do remember names. But.
You guys pay a lot of attention to the regionals, is what I'm getting at.
We do. Because from a standpoint, Black Rock City can only hold so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I know that there's a greater desire for that sort of experience, more desire than there is capacity in Black Rock City. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful that folks who are excited and inspired by what they feel at Burning Man can offer that to other people.
Yeah. So what's next? What should we be on the lookout for? For as far as like where the regionals are going, are there any shifts?
Well, this year's theme for the Global Leadership Conference is workshopping the future, leaving a positive trace. So it's a little bit of play on this year's Burning Man art theme, Da Vinci's workshop. I'm excited to see and learn and hope that the GLC offers experience to get together folks who are helping to support a similar renaissance collision between creative expression and technology innovation. I'm hopeful that GLC offers that to mm-hmm. folks who are coming. And what's next is we have recently, Burning Man, launched a call out for regional groups and art collectives to propose projects around the base of the man mm-hmm. at Black Rock City. So this will be a variation on past, you're probably familiar with this in San Diego, past regional collaborations like Circle of Regional Effigies or the Midway at the Base of the Man or the Souk.
Yeah. I worked on Souk and this last Midway project.
Yeah, cool.
So
this is
shifting.
The new project. And if you go to the Burning Man Journal right now, there's a call out.
Right now. Cancel this podcast. Go do that right now.
There's a call out. Or you check your local regional announce groups. There's call out circulating for folks to propose a project for the Base of the Man. And the projects that we hope will, and we call them the guilds, we hope that they'll offer some sort of skill or some sort of learning opportunity for folks who come to visit the Base of the Man.
Mm-hmm. How will this be different than the previous years? As far as organization?
It's a different configuration. Mm-hmm. Have you had a chance to check out some of the drawings and designs?
For
the man this year.
No.
Okay, then I'm not going to say anymore because I think you should check it out.
Okay.
Because I don't want to ruin the surprise.
How about you can show me after the...
I will show you afterwards. Okay. It's on the blog. Yeah. But yeah, so it sort of complements the art theme
mm-hmm.
and sort of the new design for the man this year.
Yeah. Because I know in San Diego specifically, because there was core... from the years before where it was like all of San Diego together, but then we had two San Diego regional projects this year. They mm-hmm. both got approved. Is that sort of like the case with all the regionals? I mean, basically different crews can still get together, or are we still trying to get all the region together to do one project as a whole?
I don't think there's a cut and dry, like, mm-hmm. yes, we are making everyone work together in one region. But I think, I mean, the cool thing about San Diego, you guys are so active. Yeah. You guys have...
We do a lot of yoga.
Do a lot of yoga. But you clearly have developed like a level of experience and knowing how to work together in teams that if you have more than one idea to share and you're really excited about, then, mm-hmm. It's worth proposing.
Yeah. Well, we're very good at making it look like we're working together.
Okay. So appearances.
We're totally, it's just like any other adorable dysfunctional family. So what's next for you personally? How do you foresee yourself working here for many, many, many years to come and retiring?
Oh, that's a tough question to ask. Yeah. Whether that would be a tough question for me to answer. Where I think wherever I'm working or wherever
sure.
I am, right now I foresee myself staying here.
Mm-hmm.
Where that will take me, I don't really know. Who really knows? But I'm excited to be where I am and super, super engaged and really looking forward to seeing where this regional network ride takes
yeah.
me and other folks.
Very cool. So are we. Well, thank you so much for joining
thank
us.
Thank you, Arash.
It's been awesome. All right, there it is. Our little episode. Hey, you can tweet me directly at Mr. Arash, that's spelled MRARASH,
And when discussing the show, please do use the hashtag #BurnerPodcast. You can also catch me on the Crappy Awesome podcast. It is a weekly interview show and a staple in the independent hip-hop community for like 5 years now and over 200 plus episodes. Over 200 or 200 plus. Find it over at platformcollection.com. Shows are up on... I already told you all that part. Leave some reviews on iTunes, though. That's the part that I keep telling you guys. I know it's hard because you're listening, but go on there. Say the show's good. Or it sucks. I really don't care. Just leave something. Our intermission music is by Duckman. Check out his music over at duckmansd.bandcamp.com. And if you're a musician in the community, tweet your music over to Navjeet. I am Navjeet. That's @IamNavjeet to be considered for some sort of rotation. The Burner Podcast theme song is America's Horse With No Name remix produced by Joman. Do check out his stuff over at soundcloud.com/DJ Joman. This episode is produced by Meg King. If you have any questions or suggestions for future guests, shoot them over to Meg King. She is on Twitter @ThatMegKing. Our online editor is Tanasi. He writes and curates the blog. You can reach him by shooting him a message at burnerpodcast.com. Hope you'll join us next time. We do release new episodes on the first and third Wednesdays of the month. So until next time, love and light and all that other crap. Good night.